This is Audible.
Time Warner Audiobooks presents City of Bones, written by Michael Connelly and read by Peter J. Fernandez. This is for John Houghton, for the help, the friendship, and the stories. Chapter 1. The old lady had changed her mind about dying, but by then it was too late. She had dug her fingers into the paint and plaster of the nearby wall until most of her fingernails had broken off. Then she had gone for the neck, scrabbling to push the bloodied fingertips up and under the cord. She broke four toes, kicking at the walls. She had tried so hard, shown such a desperate will to live, that it made Harry Bosch wonder what had happened before. Where was that determination and will, and why had it deserted her until after she had put the extension cord noose around her neck and kicked over the chair? Why had it hidden from her? These were not official questions that would be raised in his death report, but they were the things Bosch couldn't avoid thinking about as he sat in his car outside the Splendid Age retirement home on Sunset Boulevard, east of the Hollywood Freeway. It was 4:20 p.m. on the first day of the year. Bosch had drawn holiday call-out duty. The day more than half over, and that duty consisted of two suicide runs. One a gunshot, the other the hanging. Both victims were women. In both cases, there was evidence of depression and desperation, isolation. New Year's Day was always a big day for suicides. While most people greeted the day with a sense of hope and renewal, there were those who saw it as a good day to die. Some, like the old lady, not realizing their mistake until it was too late. Bosch looked up through the windshield and watched as the latest victim's body, on a wheeled stretcher and covered in a green blanket, was loaded into the coroner's blue van. He saw there was one other occupied stretcher in the van and knew it was from the first suicide, a 34-year-old actress who had shot herself while parked at a Hollywood overlook on Mulholland Drive. Bosch and the body crew had followed one case to the other. Bosch's cell phone chirped, and he welcomed the intrusion into his thoughts on small deaths. It was Mankiewicz, the watch sergeant at the Hollywood division of the Los Angeles Police Department.
"You finished with that yet?"
"I'm about to clear."
"Anything?"
"A changed my mind suicide. You got something else?"
"Yeah, and I didn't think I should go out on the radio with it. Must be a slow day for the media, getting more what's happening calls from reporters than I'm getting service calls from citizens. They all want to do something on the first one, the actress on Mulholland. You know, a death of a Hollywood dream story, and they'd probably jump all over this latest call, too."
"Yeah? What is it?"
"A citizen up in Laurel Canyon, on Wonderland. He just called up and said his dog came back from a run in the woods with a bone in its mouth. The guy says it's human. An arm bone from a kid."
Bosch almost groaned. There were four or five call-outs like this a year. Hysteria, always followed by simple explanation. Animal bones. Through the windshield, he saluted the two body movers from the coroner's office as they headed to the front doors of the van.
"I know what you're thinking, Harry. Not another bone run. You've done it 100 times, and it's always the same thing. Coyote, deer, whatever. But listen, this guy with the dog, he's an M.D. And he says there's no doubt it's a humerus. That's the upper arm bone. He says it's a child, Harry. And then get this, he said..."
There was silence while Mankiewicz apparently looked for his notes. Bosch watched the coroner's blue van pull off into traffic. When Mankiewicz came back, he was obviously reading.
"The bone's got a fracture clearly visible just above the medial epicondyle, whatever that is."
Bosch's jaw tightened. He felt a slight tickle of electric current go down the back of his neck.
"That's off my notes. I don't know if I'm saying it right. The point is, this doctor says it was just a kid, Harry. So could you humor us and go check out this humerus?"
Bosch didn't respond.
"Sorry. Had to get that in.
Yeah, that was funny, Mank. What's the address? Mankiewicz gave it to him and told him he had already dispatched a patrol team. You were right to keep it off the air. Let's try to keep it that way. Mankiewicz said he would. Bosch closed his phone and started the car. He glanced over at the entrance to the retirement home before pulling away from the curb. There was nothing about it that looked splendid to him. The woman who had hung herself in the closet of her tiny bedroom had no next of kin, according to the operators of the home. In death, she would be treated the way she had been in life, left alone and forgotten. Bosch pulled away from the curb and headed toward Laurel Canyon. Chapter 2 Bosch listened to the Lakers game on the car radio while he made his way into the canyon and then up Lookout Mountain to Wonderland Avenue. He wasn't a religious follower of professional basketball, but wanted to get a sense of the situation in case he needed his partner, Jerry Edgar. Bosch was working alone because Edgar had lucked into a pair of choice seats to the game. Bosch had agreed to handle the callouts and to not bother Edgar unless a homicide or something Bosch couldn't handle alone came up. Bosch was alone also because the third member of his team, Kismin Ryder, had been promoted nearly a year earlier to robbery-homicide division and still had not been replaced. It was early third quarter and the game with the Trailblazers was tied. While Bosch wasn't a hardcore fan, he knew enough from Edgar's constant talking about the game and begging to be left free of call-out duty that it was an important matchup with one of the Los Angeles team's top rivals. He decided not to page Edgar until he had gotten to the scene and assessed the situation. He turned the radio off when he started losing the AM station in the canyon. The drive up was steep. Laurel Canyon was a cut in the Santa Monica Mountains. The tributary roads ranged up toward the crest of the mountains. Wonderland Avenue dead-ended in a remote spot where the half-million-dollar homes were surrounded by heavily wooded and steep terrain. Bosch instinctively knew that searching for bones in the area would be a logistical nightmare. He pulled to a stop behind a patrol car already at the address Mankiewicz had provided and checked his watch. It was 4:38, and he wrote it down on a fresh page of his legal pad. He figured he had less than an hour of daylight left. A patrol officer he didn't recognize answered his knock. Her nameplate said Brasher. She led him back through the house to a home office where her partner, a cop whom Bosch recognized and knew was named Edgewood, was talking to a white-haired man who sat behind a cluttered desk. There was a shoebox with the top off on the desk. Bosch stepped forward and introduced himself. The white-haired man said he was Dr. Paul Gio, a general practitioner. Leaning forward, Bosch could see that the shoebox contained the bone that had drawn them all together. It was dark brown and looked like a gnarled piece of driftwood. He could also see a dog lying on the floor next to the doctor's desk chair. It was a large dog with a yellow coat. "So this is it," Bosch said, looking back down into the box. "Yes, detective, that's your bone," Gio said. "And as you can see..." He reached to a shelf behind the desk and pulled down a heavy copy of Gray's Anatomy. He opened it to a previously marked spot. Bosch noticed he was wearing latex gloves. The page showed an illustration of a bone, anterior and posterior views. In the corner of the page was a small sketch of a skeleton with the humerus bone of both arms highlighted. "The humerus," Gio said, tapping the page. "And then we have the recovered specimen." He reached into the shoebox and gently lifted the bone. Holding it above the book's illustration, he went through a point-by-point comparison. "Medial epicondyle, trochlea, greater and lesser tubercle," he said. "It's all there. And I was just telling these two officers I know my bones even without the book. This bone is human, detective. There's no doubt." Bosch looked at Guillot's face. There was a slight quiver, perhaps the first showing of the tremors of Parkinson's. "Are you retired, doctor?" "Yes, but it doesn't mean I don't know a bone when I see..." "I'm not challenging you, Dr. Gio." Bosch tried to smile. You say it is human. I believe it, okay? I'm just trying to get the lay of the land here. You can put that back into the box now if you want. Gio replaced the bone in the shoebox. What's your dog's name?
Calamity.
Bosch looked down at the dog. It appeared to be sleeping.
When she was a pup, she was a lot of trouble.
Bosch nodded.
So, if you don't mind telling it again, tell me what happened today.
Gio reached down and ruffled the dog's collar. The dog looked up at him for a moment, and then put its head back down and closed its eyes.
I took Calamity out for her afternoon walk. Usually when I get up to the circle, I take her off the leash and let her run up into the woods. She likes it.
What kind of dog is she? Bosch asked.
Yellow Lab,
Brasher answered quickly from behind him. Bosch turned and looked at her. She realized she had made a mistake by intruding and nodded, and stepped back toward the door of the room where her partner was.
You guys can clear if you have other calls, Bosch said.
I can take it from here. Edgewood nodded and signaled his partner out.
Thank you, Doctor, he said as he went.
Don't mention it.
Bosch thought of something.
Hey, guys.
Edgewood and Brasher turned back.
Let's keep this off the air, okay?
You got it, said Brasher,
her eyes holding on Bosch's until he looked away. After the officers left, Bosch looked back at the doctor and noticed that the facial tremor was slightly more pronounced now.
They didn't believe me at first either, he said.
It's just that we get a lot of calls like this. But I believe you, Doctor. So why don't you continue with the story?
Gio nodded. Well, I was up on the circle and I took off the leash. She went up into the woods like she likes to do. She's well trained. When I whistle, she comes back. Trouble is, I can't whistle very loud anymore. So if she goes where she can't hear me, then I have to wait, you see.
What happened today when she found the bone?
I whistled and she didn't come back.
So she was pretty far up there.
Yes, exactly. I waited. I whistled a few more times, and then finally she came down out of the woods next to Mr. Ulrich's house. She had the bone in her mouth. At first I thought it was a stick, you see, and that she wanted to play fetch with it. But as she came to me, I recognized the shape. I took it from her. Had a fight over that. And then I called you people after I examined it here and was sure.
You people, Bosch thought. It was always said like that, as if the police were another species. The blue species which carried armor that the horrors of the world could not pierce.
When you called, you told the sergeant that the bone had a fracture.
Absolutely.
Gio picked up the bone again, handling it gently. He turned it and ran his finger along a vertical striation along the bone's surface.
That's a break line, detective. It's a healed fracture.
Okay. Bosch pointed to the box and the doctor returned the bone.
Doctor, do you mind putting your dog on a leash and taking a walk up to the circle with me?
Not at all. I just need to change my shoes.
I need to change, too. How about if I meet you out front?
Right away.
I'm going to take this now.
Bosch put the top back on the shoebox and then carried it with two hands, making sure not to turn the box or jostle its contents in any way. Outside, Bosch noticed the patrol car was still in front of the house. The two officers sat inside it, apparently writing out reports. He went to his car and placed the shoebox on the front passenger seat. Since he had been on call-out, he had not dressed in a suit. He had on a sport coat with blue jeans and a white Oxford shirt. He stripped off his coat, folded it inside out, and put it on the back seat. He noticed that the trigger from the weapon he kept holstered on his hip had worn a hole in the lining, and the jacket wasn't even a year old. Soon it would work its way into the pocket, and then all the way through. More often than not, he wore out his coats from the inside. He took his shirt off next, revealing a white T-shirt beneath. He then opened the trunk to get out the pair of work boots from his crime scene equipment box. As he leaned against the rear bumper and changed his shoes, He saw Brasher get out of the patrol car and come back toward him.
So it looks legit, huh?
Think so. Somebody at the ME's office will have to confirm, though.
You going to go up and look?
I'm going to try to. Not much light left, though. Probably be back out here tomorrow.
By the way, I'm Julia Brasher. I'm new in the division.
Harry Bosch.
I know, I've heard of you.
I deny everything.
She smiled at the line and put her hand out, but Bosch was right in the middle of tying one of the boots. He stopped and shook her hand.
Sorry, she said. My timing is off today.
Don't worry about it.
He finished tying the boot and stood up off the bumper.
When I blurted out the answer in there, about the dog, I immediately realized you were trying to establish a rapport with the doctor. That was wrong. I'm sorry.
Bosch studied her for a moment. She was mid-30s, with dark hair and a tight braid that left a short tail going over the back of her collar. Her eyes were dark brown. He guessed she liked the outdoors. Her skin had an even tan.
Like I said, don't worry about it.
You're alone?
Bosch hesitated.
My partner's working on something else while I check this out.
He saw the doctor coming out the front door of the house with the dog on a leash. He decided not to get out his crime scene jumpsuit and put it on. He glanced over at Julia Brasher, who was now watching the approaching dog.
You guys don't have calls?
No, it's slow.
Bosch looked down at the mag light in his equipment box. He looked at her and then reached into the trunk and grabbed an oil rag, which he threw over the flashlight. He took out a roll of yellow crime scene tape and the Polaroid camera, then closed the trunk and turned to Brasher.
Then do you mind if I borrow your mag?
I forgot mine.
No problem.
She slid the flashlight out of the ring on her equipment belt and handed it to him. The doctor and his dog came up then.
Ready?
Okay, doctor, I want you to take us up to the spot where you let the dog go and we'll see where she goes.
I'm not sure you'll be able to stay with her.
I'll worry about that, doctor.
This way, then.
They walked up the incline toward the small turnaround circle where Wonderland reached a dead end. Brasher made a hand signal to her partner in the car and walked along with them.
You know, we had a little excitement up this way a few years ago, Guillot said. A man was followed home from the Hollywood Bowl and then killed in a robbery.
I remember, Bosch said. He knew the investigation was still open, but didn't mention it. It wasn't his case. Dr. Guillot walked with a strong step that belied his age and apparent condition. He let the dog set the pace, and soon moved several paces ahead of Bosch and Brasher.
So, where were you before? Bosch asked Brasher.
What do you mean?
You said you were new in Hollywood Division. What about before?
Oh, the Academy.
He was surprised. He looked over at her, thinking he might need to reassess his age estimate. She nodded and said,
I know. I'm old.
Bosch got embarrassed.
No, I wasn't saying that. I just thought that you'd been somewhere else. You don't seem like a rookie.
I didn't go in until I was 34.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Got the bug a little late.
What were you doing before?
Oh, a bunch of different things. Travel, mostly. Took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do. And you want to know what I want to do the most?
Bosch looked at her.
What?
What you do. Homicide.
He didn't know what to say, whether to encourage her or dissuade her.
Well, good luck, he said.
I mean, don't you just find it to be the most fulfilling job ever? Look at what you do. You take the most evil people out of the mix.
The mix?
Society.
Yeah, I guess so. When we get lucky.
They caught up to Dr. Guillot, who had stopped with the dog at the turnaround circle.
This the place?
Yes. I let her go here. She went up through there.
He pointed to an empty and overgrown lot that started level with the street, but then quickly rose into a steep incline toward the crest of the hills. There was a large concrete drainage culvert, which explained why the lot had never been built on. It was city property, used to funnel stormwater runoff away from the homes on the street. Many of the streets in the canyon were former creek and riverbeds. When it rained, they would return to their original purpose, if not for the drainage system.
"Are you going up there?" the doctor asked.
"I'm going to try."
"I'll go with you," Brasher said.
Bosch looked at her and then turned at the sound of a car. It was the patrol car. It pulled up and Edgewood put down the window.
"We got a hot shot, partner. Double D."
He nodded toward the empty passenger seat. Brasher frowned and looked at Bosch.
"I hate domestic disputes."
Bosch smiled. He hated them too, especially when they turned into homicides. "Sorry about that."
"Well, maybe next time."
She started around the front of the car. "Here," Bosch said, holding out the mag light.
"I've got an extra in the car," she said. "You can just get that back to me."
"You sure?" He was tempted to ask for a phone number, but didn't.
"I'm sure." "Good luck."
"You too. Be careful." She smiled at him and then hurried around the front of the car. She got in and the car pulled away. Bosch turned his attention back to Gio and the dog.
"An attractive woman," Gio said.
Bosch ignored it, wondering if the doctor had made the comment based on seeing Bosch's reaction to Brasher. He hoped he hadn't been that obvious.
"Okay, doctor," he said. "Let the dog go and I'll try to keep up."
Gio unhooked the leash while patting the dog's chest.
"Go get the bone, girl. Get a bone. Go."
The dog took off into the lot and was gone from sight before Bosch had taken a step. He almost laughed.
"Well, I guess you were right about that, Doc."
He turned to make sure the patrol car was gone and Brasher hadn't seen the dog take off.
"You want me to whistle?"
"Nah. I'll just go in and take a look around, see if I can catch up to her."
He turned the flashlight on. Chapter 3. The woods were dark long before the sun disappeared. The overhead canopy created by a tall stand of Monterey pines knocked down most of the light before it got to the ground. Bosch used the flashlight and made his way up the hillside in the direction in which he had heard the dog moving through the brush. It was slow moving and hard work. The ground contained a foot-thick layer of pine needles that gave way often beneath Bosch's boots as he tried for purchase on the incline. Soon his hands were sticky with sap from grabbing branches to keep himself upright. It took him nearly 10 minutes to go 30 yards up the hillside. Then the ground started to level off, and the light got better as the tall trees thinned. Bosch looked around for the dog but didn't see her. He called down to the street, though he could no longer see it or Dr. Gio.
"Dr. Gio! Can you hear me?"
"Yes, I hear you."
"Whistle for your dog."
He then heard a three-part whistle. It was distinct but very low, having the same trouble getting through the trees and underbrush as the sunlight had. Bosch tried to repeat it, and after a few tries thought he had it right, but the dog didn't come. Bosch pressed on, staying on the level ground because he believed that if someone was going to bury or abandon a body, then it would be done on even ground as opposed to the steep slope. Following a path of least resistance, he moved into a stand of acacia trees. And here he immediately came upon a spot where the earth had recently been disturbed. It had been overturned, as if a tool or an animal had been randomly rooting in the soil. He used his foot to push some of the dirt and twigs aside, and then realized they weren't twigs. He dropped to his knees
and use the light to study the short brown bones scattered over a square foot of dirt. He believed he was looking at the disjointed fingers of a hand, a small hand, a child's hand. Bosch stood up. He realized that his interest in Julia Brasher had distracted him. He had brought no means with him for collecting the bones. Picking them up and carrying them down the hill would violate every tenet of evidence collection. The Polaroid camera hung on a shoelace around his neck. He raised it now and took a close-up shot of the bones. He then stepped back and took a wider shot of the spot beneath the acacia trees. In the distance, he heard Dr. Guillot's weak whistle. Bosch went to work with the yellow plastic crime scene tape. He tied a short length of it around the trunk of one of the acacia trees and then strung a boundary around the trees. Thinking about how he would work the case the following morning, he stepped out of the cover of the acacia trees and looked for something to use as an aerial marker. He found a nearby growth of sagebrush. He wrapped the crime scene tape around and over the top of the bush several times. When he was finished, it was almost dark. He took another cursory look around the area, but knew that a flashlight search was useless, and the ground would need to be exhaustively covered in the morning. Using a small penknife attached to his keychain, he began cutting 4-foot lengths of the crime scene tape off the roll. Making his way back down the hill, he tied the strips off at intervals on tree branches and bushes. He heard voices as he got closer to the street and used them to maintain his direction. At one point on the incline, the soft ground suddenly gave way and he fell, tumbling hard into the base of a pine tree. The tree impacted his midsection, tearing his shirt and badly scratching his side. Bosch didn't move for several seconds. He thought he might have cracked his ribs on the right side. His breathing was difficult and painful. He groaned loudly and slowly pulled himself up on the tree trunk so that he could continue to follow the voices. He soon came back down into the street, where Dr. Guillot was waiting with his dog and another man. The two men looked shocked when they saw the blood on Bosch's shirt.
"Oh my, what happened?" Guillot cried out.
"Nothing. I fell."
"Your shirt is... there's blood."
"Comes with the job."
"Let me look at your chest."
The doctor moved in to look, but Bosch held his hands up. "I'm okay." "Who is this?" The other man answered.
"I'm Victor Ulrich. I live there."
He pointed to the house next to the lot. Bosch nodded.
"I just came out to see what was going on."
"Well, nothing is going on at the moment. But there is a crime scene up there. Or there will be. We probably won't be back to work it until tomorrow morning. But I need both you men to keep clear of it and not to tell anybody about this. All right?" Both of the neighbors nodded. "And doctor, don't let your dog off the leash for a few days. I need to go back down to my car to make a phone call. Mr. Ulrich, I'm sure we will want to talk to you tomorrow. Will you be around?"
"Sure."
"Anytime.
I work at home."
"Doing what?"
"Writing."
"Okay, we'll see you tomorrow." Bosch headed back down the street with Guillot and the dog.
"You really need me to take a look at your injury," Guillot insisted.
"It'll be fine." Bosch glanced to his left and thought he saw a curtain quickly close behind a window of the house they were passing.
"The way you are holding yourself when you walk. You've damaged a rib," Guillot said. "Maybe you've broken it. Maybe more than one."
Bosch thought of the small, thin bones he had just seen beneath the acacia trees.
"There's nothing you can do for a rib, broken or not," he said. "I can tape it. You'll breathe a hell of a lot easier. I can also take care of that wound."
Bosch relented.
"Okay, Doc, you get out your black bag. I'm going to get my other shirt."
Inside Guillot's house, a few minutes later, the doctor cleaned the deep scratch on the side of Bosch's chest and taped his ribs. It did feel better, but it still hurt. Guillot said he could no longer write a prescription, but suggested Bosch not take anything more powerful than aspirin anyway. Bosch remembered that he had a prescription bottle with some Vicodin tablets left over from when he'd had a wisdom tooth removed a few months earlier. They would smooth out the pain, if he wanted to go that way. "I'll be fine," Bosch said. "Thanks for fixing me up."
"Don't mention it."
Bosch pulled on his good shirt and watched Gio as he closed up his first aid kit. He wondered how long it had been since the doctor had used his skills on a patient. "How long have you been retired?" he asked.
12 years next month."
"You miss it?" Gio turned from the first aid kit and looked at him. The tremor was gone.
"Every day."
"I don't miss the actual work. You know, the cases. But it was a job that made a difference. I miss that." Bosch thought about how Julia Brasher had described homicide work earlier. He nodded that he understood what Gio was saying.
"You said there was a crime scene up there?" the doctor asked.
"Yes. I found more bones." "I've got to make a call. See what we're going to do. Can I borrow your phone?" "I don't think my cell will work around here."
"No, they never do in the canyon. Use the phone on the desk there, and I'll give you some privacy."
He headed out, carrying the first aid kit with him. Bosch went behind the desk and sat down. The dog was on the ground next to the chair. The animal looked up and seemed startled when she saw Bosch in the master spot.
"Calamity," he said. "I think you lived up to your name today, girl."
Bosch reached down and rubbed the scruff of the dog's neck. The dog growled, and he quickly took his hand away, wondering if it was the dog's training or something about himself that had caused the hostile response. He picked up the phone and called the home of his supervisor, Lieutenant Grace Billets. He explained what had happened on Wonderland Avenue and his findings up on the hill.
"Harry, how old do these bones look?" Billets asked.
Bosch looked at the Polaroid he had taken of the small bones he had found in the dirt. It was a bad photo, the flash overexposing it because he was too close.
"I don't know. They look old to me. I'd say we're talking years here."
"Okay, so whatever's there at the scene isn't fresh."
"Maybe freshly uncovered, but no. It's been there."
"That's what I'm saying. So I think we should stick a pin in it and gear up for tomorrow. Whatever's up there on that hill, it's not going anywhere tonight."
"Yeah," Bosch said. "I'm thinking the same thing."
She was silent a moment before speaking.
"These kind of cases, Harry."
"What?"
"They drain the budget. They drain manpower. And they're the hardest to close, if you can close them."
"Okay, I'll climb back up there and cover the bones up. I'll tell the doctor to keep his dog on a leash. Come on, Harry, you know what I mean." She exhaled loudly.
"First day of the year, and we're going to start in the hole."
Bosch was silent, letting her work through her administrative frustrations. It didn't take long. It was one of the things he liked about her.
"Okay, anything else happened today?"
"Not too much. Couple suicides, that's it so far."
"Okay. When are you going to start tomorrow?"
"I'd like to get out there early. I'll make some calls and see what I can get going. And get the bone the dog found confirmed before we start anything."
"Okay. Let me know."
Bosch agreed and hung up the phone. He next called Teresa Corazon, the county medical examiner, at home. Though their relationship outside of work had ended years before, and she had moved at least 2 times since, she had always kept the same number, and Bosch knew it by heart. It came in handy now. He explained what he had going and that he needed an official confirmation of the bone as human before he set other things in motion. He also told her that if it was confirmed, he would need an archaeological team to work the crime scene as soon as possible. Corazon put him on hold for almost 5 minutes.
"Okay," she said when she came back on the line. "I couldn't get Kathy Cole. She's not home."
Bosch knew that Cole was the staff archaeologist. Her real expertise and reason for her inclusion as a full-time employee was retrieving bones from the body dump sites up in the desert of the North County, which was a weekly occurrence. But Bosch knew she would be called in to handle the search for bones off Wonderland Avenue. So what do you want me to do? I want to get this confirmed tonight. Just hold your horses, Harry. You're always so impatient. You're like a dog with a bone. No pun intended. It's a kid, Teresa. Can we be serious? Just come here. I'll look at this bone. And what about tomorrow? I'll get things in motion. I left a message for Kathy, and as soon as we hang up here, I'll call the office and have her paged. She'll head up the dig as soon as the sun is up, and we can get in there. Once the bones are recovered, there is a forensic anthropologist at UCLA we have on retainer, and I can bring him in if he's in town. And I'll be there myself. Are you satisfied? This last part gave Bosch pause. Teresa, he finally said, I want to try to keep this as low profile as I can for as long as I can. And what are you implying? That I'm not sure that the medical examiner for Los Angeles County needs to be there. And that I haven't seen you at a crime scene without a cameraman in tow for a long time. Harry, he's a private videographer, okay? The film he takes is for future use by me and controlled solely by me. It doesn't end up on the 6 o'clock news. Whatever. I just think we need to avoid any complications on this one. It's a child case. You know how they get. Just get over here with that bone. I'm leaving in an hour. She abruptly hung up. Bosch wished he had been a little more politic with Corazon, but was glad he'd made his point. Corazon was a personality, regularly appearing on court TV and network shows as a forensic expert. She had also taken to having a cameraman follow her so that her cases could be turned into documentaries for broadcast on any of the cop and legal shows on the vast cable and satellite spectrum. He could not and would not let her goals as a celebrity coroner interfere with his goals as an investigator of what might be the homicide of a child. He decided he'd make the calls to the department's special services and canine units after he got confirmation on the bone. He got up and left the room, looking for Gio. The doctor was in the kitchen, sitting at a small table and writing in a spiral-bound notebook. He looked up at Bosch. Just writing a few notes on your treatment. I've kept notes on every patient I've ever treated. Bosch just nodded, even though he thought it was odd for Gio to be writing about him. I'm gonna go, doctor. We'll be back tomorrow. In force, I'd expect. We might want to use your dog again. Will you be here?
I'll be here and be glad to help. How are the ribs?
They hurt.
Only when you breathe, right? That'll last about a week.
Thanks for taking care of me. You don't need that shoebox back, do you?
No, I wouldn't want that back now.
Bosch turned to head toward the front door, but then turned back to Gio.
Doctor, do you live alone here?
I do now.
My wife died 2 years ago,
a month before our 50th anniversary.
I'm sorry.
Gio nodded and said,
My daughter has her own family up in Seattle. I see them on special occasions.
Bosch felt like asking why only on special occasions, but didn't. He thanked the man again and left. Driving out of the canyon and toward Teresa Corazon's place in Hancock Park, he kept his hand on the shoebox so that it would not be jostled or slide off the seat. He felt a deep sense of dread rising from within. He knew it was because fate had certainly not smiled on him this day. He had caught the worst kind of case there was to catch. A child case. Child cases haunted you. They hollowed you out and scarred you. There was no bulletproof vest thick enough to stop you from being pierced. Child cases left you knowing the world was full of lost light. Chapter 4. Teresa Corazon lived in a Mediterranean-style mansion with a stone turnaround circle complete with koi pond in front. 8 years earlier, when Bosch had shared a brief relationship with her, she had lived in a one-bedroom condominium. The riches of television and celebrity had paid for the house and the lifestyle that came with it. She was not even remotely like the woman who used to show up at the house unannounced at midnight with a cheap bottle of red wine from Trader Joe's and a video of her favorite movie to watch. The woman who was unabashedly ambitious but not yet skilled at using her position to enrich herself. Bosch knew he now served as a reminder of what she had been and what she had lost in order to gain all that she had. It was no wonder that their interactions were now few and far between, but as tense as a visit to the dentist when they were unavoidable. He parked on the circle and got out with the shoebox and the Polaroids. He looked into the pond as he came around the car and could see the dark shapes of the fish moving below the surface. He smiled, thinking about the movie Chinatown and how often they had watched it the year they were together. He remembered how much he enjoyed the portrayal of the coroner. He wore a black butcher's apron and ate a sandwich while examining a body. Bosch doubted she had the same sense of humor about things anymore. The light hanging over the heavy wood door to the house went on, and Corazon opened it before he got there. She was wearing black slacks and a cream-colored blouse. She looked past him at the slickback he had been driving. "Let's make this quick, before that car drips oil on my stones." "Hello to you, too, Teresa." "That's it?" She pointed at the shoebox. "This is it." He handed her the Polaroids and started taking the lid off the box. It was clear she was not asking him in for a glass of New Year's champagne. "You want to do this right here?"
"I don't have a lot of time. I thought you'd be here sooner."
"What moron took these?"
"That would be me.
I can't tell anything from these.
Do you have a glove?"
Bosch pulled a latex glove out of his coat pocket and handed it to her. He took the photos back and put them in an inside pocket of his jacket. She expertly snapped the glove on and reached into the open box. She held the bone up and turned it in the light. He was silent. He could smell her perfume. It was strong, as usual. A holdover from her days when she spent most of her time in autopsy suites. After a 5-second examination, she put the bone back down in the box.
"Human."
"You sure?" She looked up at him with a glare as she snapped off the glove.
"It's the humerus. The upper arm. I'd say a child of about 10. You may no longer respect my skills, Harry, but I do still have them."
She dropped the glove into the box on top of the bone. Bosch could roll with all the verbal sparring from her, but it bothered him that she did that with the glove, dropping it on the child's bone like that. He reached into the box and took the glove out. He remembered something and held the glove back out to her. "The man whose dog found this said there was a fracture on the bone. A healed fracture. Do you want to take a look and see if you..."
"No, I'm late for an engagement."
"What you need to know right now is if it is human. You now have that confirmation. Further examination will come later under proper settings at the medical examiner's office.
No, I really have to go. I'll be there tomorrow morning."
Bosch held her eyes for a long moment.
"Sure, Teresa. Have a good time tonight."
She broke off the stare and folded her arms across her chest. He carefully put the top back on the shoebox, nodded to her, and headed back to his car. He heard the heavy door close behind him. Thinking of the movie again as he passed the koi pond, he spoke the film's final line quietly to himself. "Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown." He got in the car and drove home, his hand holding the shoebox secure on the seat next to him. Chapter 5. By 9 o'clock the next morning, the end of Wonderland Avenue was a law enforcement encampment, and at its center was Harry Bosch.
He directed teams from patrol, K-9, the Scientific Investigation Division, the Medical Examiner's Office, and the Special Services Unit. A department helicopter circled above, and a dozen police academy cadets milled about, waiting for orders. Earlier, the aerial unit had locked in on the sagebrush Bosch had wrapped in yellow crime scene tape and used it as a base point to determine that Wonderland offered the closest access to the spot where Bosch had found the bones. The Special Services Unit then swung into action. Following the trail of crime scene tape up the hillside, the six-man team hammered and strung together a series of wooden ramps and steps with rope guidelines that led up the hillside to the bones. Accessing and exiting the site would now be much easier than it had been for Bosch the evening before. It was impossible to keep such a nest of police activity quiet. Also, by 9 a.m., the neighborhood had become a media encampment. The media trucks were stacked behind the roadblock set a half block from the turnaround circle. The reporters were gathering into press conference-sized groups. And no fewer than 5 news helicopters were circling at an altitude above the department's chopper. It all created a background cacophony that had already resulted in numerous complaints from residents on the street to police administrators at Parker Center downtown. Bosch was getting ready to lead the first group up to the crime scene. He first conferred with Jerry Edgar, who had been apprised of the case the night before. "All right, we're going to take the ME and SID up first," he said, pronouncing the acronyms as ME and SID. "Then we'll take the cadets and the dogs up. I want you to oversee that part of it." "No problem. You see, your pal, the Emmy's got her damn cameraman with her." "Nothing we can do about it at the moment. Let's just hope she gets bored and goes back downtown where she belongs. You know, for all we know, these could be old Indian bones or something." Bosch shook his head. "I don't think so. Too shallow." Bosch walked over to the first group. Teresa Corazon, her videographer, and her 4-person dig team, which consisted of archaeologist Kathy Cole and 3 investigators who would do the spade work. The dig team members were dressed in white jumpsuits. Corazon was in an outfit similar to what she was wearing the night before, including shoes with 2-inch heels. Also in the group were 2 criminalists from SID. Bosch signaled the group into a tighter circle so he could speak privately to them and not be overheard by all the others milling about. "Okay. We're going to go up and start the documentation and recovery. Once we have all of you in place, we'll bring up the dogs and the cadets to search the adjacent areas and possibly expand the crime scene. You guys?" He stopped to reach his hand up to Corazon's cameraman. "Turn that off. You can film her, but not me." The man lowered his camera, and Bosch gave Corazon a look, and then continued. "You all know what you're doing, so I don't need to brief you. The one thing I do want to say is that it's tough going getting up there, even with the ramps and the stairs, so be careful. Hold on to the ropes, watch your footing. We don't want anybody hurt. If you have heavy equipment, break it up and make 2 or 3 trips. If you still need help, I'll have the cadets bring it up. Don't worry about time. Worry about safety. All right? Everybody cool?" He got simultaneous nods from everybody. Bosch signaled Corazon away from the others and into a private conversation. "You're not dressed right," he said. "Look, don't you start telling—" "You want me to take my shirt off so you can see my ribs? The side of my chest looks like blueberry pie because I fell up there last night. Those shoes you've got on aren't going to work. It might look good for the camera, but not—" "I'm fine. I'll take my chances. Anything else?" Bosch shook his head. "I warned you," he said. "Let's go." He headed toward the ramp and the others followed. Special Services had constructed a wooden gateway to be used as a checkpoint. A patrol officer stood there with a clipboard. He took each person's name and affiliation before they were allowed through. Bosch led the way. The climbing was easier than the day before, but his chest burned with pain as he pulled himself along on the rope guides and negotiated the ramps and steps. He said nothing, and tried not to show it.
When he got to the acacia trees, he signaled the others to hold back while he went under the crime scene tape to check first. He found the area of overturned earth and the small brown bones he had seen the night before. They appeared undisturbed.
Okay. Come on in here and have a look.
The group members came under the tape and stood over the bones in a semicircle. The camera started rolling and Corazon now took charge.
All right, the first thing we're going to do is back out and take photos. Then we're going to set up a grid and Dr. Cole will supervise the excavation and recovery. If you find anything, photograph it 9 ways from Sunday before you collect it.
She turned to one of the investigators.
Finch, I want you to handle the sketches. Standard grid, document everything. Don't assume we will be able to rely on photos.
Finch nodded.
Corazon turned to Bosch. Detective, I think we've got it. The less people in here, the better.
Bosch nodded and handed her a 2-way radio.
I'll be around. If you need me, use the rover. Cell phones don't work up here, but be careful what you say.
He pointed up at the sky where the media helicopters were circling.
Speaking of which, Cole said, I think we're going to string a tarp up off these trees so we can have some privacy as well as cut down on the sun glare. Is that okay with you?
It's your crime scene now, Bosch said. Run with it. He headed back down the ramp with Edgar behind him.
Harry, this could take days, Edgar said.
And maybe then some.
Well, they're not going to give us days. You know that, right?
Right.
I mean, these cases. We'll be lucky if we even come up with an ID.
Right. Bosch kept moving. When he got down to the street, he saw that Lieutenant Billets was on the scene with her supervisor, Captain LaValle.
Jerry, why don't you go get the cadets ready? Bosch said. Give them the crime scene 101 speech. I'll be over in a minute.
Bosch joined Billets and LaValle and updated them on what was happening, detailing the morning's activities right down to the neighborhood complaints about noise from the hammers, saws, and helicopters.
We've got to give something to the media, LaValle said. Media relations wants to know if you want them to handle it from downtown or you want to take it here.
I don't want to take it.
What does media relations know about it?
Almost nothing.
So you have to call them and they'll work up the press release.
Captain, I'm kind of busy here. Can I
make the time, detective?
Keep them off our backs.
When Bosch looked away from the captain to the reporters gathered a half block away at the roadblock, he noticed Julia Brasher showing her badge to a patrol officer and being allowed through. She was in street clothes.
All right. I'll make the call.
He started down the street to Dr. Guillot's home. He was headed toward Brasher, who smiled at him as she approached.
I've got your mag. It's in my car down here. I have to go down to Dr. Guillot's house anyway.
Oh, don't worry about it. That's not why I'm here.
She changed direction and continued with Bosch. He looked at her attire. Faded blue jeans and a t-shirt from a 5K charity run.
You're not on the clock, are you?
No, I work the 3 to 11. I just thought you might need a volunteer.
I heard about the academy call-out.
You want to go up there and look for bones, huh?
I want to learn.
Bosch nodded. They walked up the path to Guillot's door. It opened before they got there, and the doctor invited them in. Bosch asked if he could use the phone in his office again, and Guillot showed him the way, even though he didn't have to. Bosch sat down behind the desk.
How are the ribs? The doctor asked.
Fine. Brasher raised her eyebrows, and Bosch picked up on it. Had a little accident when I was up there last night.
What happened?
Oh, I was just sort of minding my own business when a tree trunk suddenly attacked me for no reason.
She grimaced and somehow managed to smile at the same time.
Bosch dialed media relations from memory and told an officer about the case in very general terms. At one point, he put his hand over the phone and asked Guillot if he wanted his name put in the press release. The doctor declined. A few minutes later, Bosch was finished and hung up.
He looked at Gio. Once we clear the scene in a few days, the reporters will probably stick around. They'll be looking for the dog that found the bone, is my guess. So if you want to stay out of it, keep Calamity off the street or they'll put two and two together.
Good advice, Gio said.
And you might want to call your neighbor, Mr. Ulrich, and tell him not to mention it to any reporters either. On the way out of the house, Bosch asked Brasher if she wanted her flashlight, and she said she didn't want to bother carrying it while she was helping search the hillside.
Get it to me whenever, she said.
Bosch liked the answer. It meant he would get at least one more chance to see her. Back at the circle, Bosch found Edgar lecturing the academy cadets.
The golden rule of the crime scene people is don't touch anything until it's been studied, photographed, and charted.
Bosch walked into the circle.
Okay, we ready?
They're ready, Edgar said.
He nodded toward two of the cadets who were holding metal detectors.
I borrowed those from Sid.
Bosch nodded and gave the cadets and Brasher the same safety speech he had given the forensic crew. They then headed up to the crime scene, Bosch introducing Brasher to Edgar, and then letting his partner lead the way through the checkpoint. He took up the rear, walking behind Brasher.
We'll see if you want to be a homicide detective by the end of the day, he said.
Anything's got to be better than chasing the radio and washing puke out of the back of your car at the end of every shift.
I remember those days.
Bosch and Edgar spread the 12 cadets and Brasher out in the areas adjacent to the stand of acacia trees, and had them begin conducting side-by-side searches. Bosch then went down and brought up the two canine teams to supplement the search. Once things were underway, he left Edgar with the cadets and went back to the acacias to see what progress had been made. He found Cole sitting on an equipment crate and supervising the placement of wooden stakes into the ground so that strings could be used to set the excavation grid. Bosch had worked one prior case with Cole and knew she was very thorough and good at what she did. She was in her late 30s with a tennis player's build and tan. Bosch had once run across her at a city park where she was playing tennis with a twin sister. They had drawn a crowd. It looked like somebody hitting the ball off a mirrored wall. Cole's straight blonde hair fell forward and hit her eyes as she looked down at the oversized clipboard on her lap. She was making notations on a piece of paper with a grid already printed on it. Bosch looked over her shoulder at the chart. Cole was labeling the individual blocks with letters of the alphabet as the corresponding stakes were placed in the ground. At the top of the page she had written, City of Bones. Bosch reached down and tapped the chart where she had written the caption.
Why do you call it that?
She shrugged her shoulders.
Because we're setting out the streets and the blocks of what will become a city to us, she said, running her fingers over some of the lines on the chart in illustration. At least while we're working here, it will feel like it. Our little city.
Bosch nodded. In every murder is the tale of a city, he said. Cole looked up at him.
Who said that?
I don't know. Somebody did.
He turned his attention to Corazon, who was squatting over the small bones on the surface of the soil, studying them while the lens of the video camera studied her. He was thinking of something to say about it, when his rover was keyed and he took it off his belt.
Bosch here.
Edgar. Better come on back over here, Harry. We already have something.
Right.
Edgar was standing in an almost level spot in the brush about 40 yards from the acacia trees. A half dozen of the cadets and Brasher had formed a circle and were looking down at something in the 2-foot-high brush. The police chopper was circling in a tighter circle above. Bosch got to the circle and looked down. It was a child's skull, partially submerged in the soil, its hollow eyes staring up at him.
Nobody touched it, Edgar said. Brasher here found it.
Bosch glanced at her, and the humor she seemed to carry in her eyes and mouth were gone. He looked back at the skull and pulled the radio off his belt.
Dr. Corazon, he said into it.
It was a long moment before her voice came back.
Yes, I'm here. What is it?
We are going to have to widen the crime scene.
Chapter 6.
With Bosch acting as the general overseeing the small army that worked the expanded crime scene,